Hi, and welcome to the Yes Life Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, that supports people with cancer in learning about integrative medicine to help them regain their health and well-being. My guest today is an extremely interesting one, Dr. Peter Kay. He's a molecular pathologist and cancer specialist who's now retired, but he's turned his attention to getting some extremely important information across to people with cancer and to practitioners concerning the choice of conventional treatments. I'm talking to Dr. Kay over the phone in Preston. Hi, Peter. Thank you very much for joining us on the Yes to Life show today.
It's my pleasure.
So you're a trained molecular pathologist and cancer specialist, and following your return home to the UK after retiring from working in Australia, you seem to have embarked on a new mission with very specific aims, and you don't at all seem to be relaxing into a nice stream of leisurely golf-filled days. What's going on? Why are you so passionate about continuing to engage with the arena of cancer? Hadn't you done your bit already?
No, the thing is that because I spent many years teaching and researching in oncology and immunology, when I returned home to the United Kingdom a number of years ago, I kept being asked questions by, particularly from cancer patients, so all about cancer and the pros and cons of various treatments and the like, because by and large, many cancer patients are in the dark about possibilities. And one of the many questions that I was asked, and still asked, is why did I get cancer when in fact, you know, I live a healthy life, I eat the right food, I don't smoke, I don't drink, and I'm not overweight, so why did I get cancer? And I explain the very, very basics of cancer to those people. There's, by and large, for all of us, there's really no escape from cancer, and I can explain, if you wish, subsequently.
Right, okay.
Another question that I was very often asked was, I know that many people die because of the treatment for cancer. How will I know whether, in fact, the treatment I am offered will help me or harm me? Mm. And that allows me to explain many elements that influence the efficacy of any particular treatment, particularly with respect to chemotherapy. Because I do have this background information, you know, I wanted to make sure that I used it as effectively as possible to help as many people as possible. So that's why I set up my information service for cancer patients and many other patients as well.
Mm, fantastic.
So that's why I offer this information.
Right. So, I strongly suspect this is going to be one of those interviews where I only just scratch the surface of the things I'd like to talk about. But anyway, the first thing I want to talk about is, well, you seem really willing to engage with a thorny issue that I think most oncologists would rather avoid, the one you just referred to, that about a quarter of cancer patients are killed by the drugs rather than the cancer that they're being treated for.
Exactly, Robin.
It's a shockingly high figure. I think history is going to be pretty harsh with it, especially when you consider that that's now largely avoidable.
It is, exactly. And I explain the reasons why, in most cases, those deaths are avoidable, particularly with respect to certain genetic types.
Mm. So, okay, let's go into why these treatments are okay for some people but can be fatal for others. Could you explain?
Of course. To understand that, it's important to be aware of the different kinds of chemotherapeutic drugs. Basically, they can be subdivided into two kinds. Those that are given to people as a prodrug, and those that are given to people in an active, as an active drug. A prodrug is a drug which is given to people in an inactive form, and when it's absorbed into the bloodstream, it has to be acted upon by certain enzymes that protect us from all sorts of toxic substances. And as part of the natural metabolic process to try and get rid of the drug, it transforms the drug into an active form. And then that active form can then do its job by killing cancer cells until it's removed, eventually removed. Now, the thing is, to activate proactive drugs, there is a series of enzymes called the cytochrome P450 system. Now, some people inherit enzymes which work very, very poorly, and some people inherit cytochrome P450 enzymes which work incredibly well. Many people have just normally active cytochrome P450 enzymes. The thing is that with respect to prodrugs, they are invariably designed to work most effectively with people who have a normally acting cytochrome P450 enzyme. Now, the thing is, if a prodrug is given to someone who has inherited a poorly acting enzyme, then the proactive drug is not really activated, so the drug treatment has very little effect.
Right.
On the other hand, if the same drug is given to someone who has inherited a highly reactive enzyme, a lot of the drug is actually activated very, very quickly, and you get a massive amount of the toxic chemotherapeutic drug, which can be very harmful.
Interesting. So can I ask a couple of questions already?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, well, first of all, so does that mean that these people, to be treated effectively with the chemotherapy, should be given different doses?
They should, based on genetic typing of the kind of cytochrome P450 enzymes that they have inherited. That's the best way to go about it. If someone is, for example, genetically typed and determined to be a rapid, or someone who activates the drug very quickly, then their dosage should be reduced.
Right.
And people who are genetically typed as poor activators, then one should go to other treatments other than chemotherapy.
Right. And this feature that people inherit of being either speedy, average, or rather low, yeah, is there anything one can do that will affect that in any way?
There are things that can be done in a very limited way, but the most important thing is to have the genetic type of those enzymes available.
Right.
And drugs given on the basis of those genetic types.
Right, right.
With regard to other kinds of chemotherapeutic drugs, which are actually administered in an active form, there is one particular set of active drugs that are given, the 5-FU or fluoropyrimidine kind of drug. They are highly toxic drugs and only have to be in the circulation for a short length of time before damage isn't done to too many healthy cells.
Right.
Now, the thing is, there is an enzyme called DPD, I won't go into the name, but DPD, which plays an important role in metabolizing that drug, so that the active drug is only around killing cells for a certain amount of time. Now, some people inherit a kind of DPD enzyme which doesn't work well at all, and these people, if they have a defective DPD enzyme and they're given fluoropyrimidine drugs, they suffer very, very serious disease and often die.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so again, particularly with people who are given, it's a very common, very aggressive drug, fluoropyrimidine series, they should definitely should be DPD enzyme type before they're given that drug.
Right. Well, these sound like incredibly important things to know. You're talking about the possibility of going through chemotherapy for almost no benefit because you're not going to activate it particularly, or risking your life at either extreme. So pretty important stuff.
It really is, Robin. The problem is most people are not aware of these important facts.
Mm. Indeed.
They're just not told.
Right. Now, you say most people, well, obviously most sort of man in the street are unlikely to know that. How about most oncologists?
They should know. The problem is, this is a very difficult situation, Robin. I don't want to get involved in the to-ing and fro-ing with the medical profession.
Mm-hmm.
I've had many people come to me, and many cancer patients, and I've mentioned certain things to them, like this, and they say, I'll go and speak to my oncologist. And they do speak to their oncologist, and in many situations, the oncologist said, oh, go to someone else, and, you know, I don't want to treat you.
Right.
This kind of attitude, and many patients become very, very fearful because of that kind of attitude by oncologists.
Mm.
But I don't want to get into battles with the oncology fraternity.
No, I understand that completely. But we are talking about extremely serious things here from the point of view of the patients who are considering these treatments. Okay, well, very interesting. I mean, you've described there the kind of genetic or biological roots of one man's meat being another man's poison.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head there, Robin.
So the mechanisms you've been talking about that make treatments highly unsuitable, they're not discussed as much as the parallel issue of treatment resistance. This plagues approaches such as chemotherapy, of course, cancer cells may not respond to a particular treatment right at the outset.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's when I worked in this area in Australia, that was always considered, it was always called the oncologist's nightmare.
Right.
And that was induction of multi-drug resistance in cancer patients, particularly with respect to chemotherapy.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, half the neoplastic cells of cancer patients actually develop multi-drug resistance. So people are given these chemotherapeutic drugs, and if their cancer cells have developed multi-drug resistance, they don't work at all, but they still kill healthy cells. And that's a very severe problem that's has been investigated for decades.
Right.
How to overcome multi-drug resistance.
Right. Well, you know, this is another problem which is in addition to the ones you've already outlined.
Exactly.
So, so even if you get a treatment that actually does work at the outset, some of them don't, but if you get one that does work at the outset, chances are, if you use it for too long, the cancer will adapt to it and find a way to cope with the treatment, and so it then becomes useless. So it's quite a conundrum. So can you tell us a bit more about how this actually plays into attempts to treat someone, and what strategies do they try and use to try and avoid this drug resistance?
Well, by and large, they don't. What I'm trying to do is to have it firmly established as routine investigations for cancer patients to have the genetic typing done for the cytochrome P450 enzymes and enzymes that I mentioned, as well as to offer a test to determine whether someone's neoplastic cells or cancer cells have actually developed multi-drug resistance.
Right.
In my mind, these should be standard tests that are offered to cancer patients.
So this is mid-treatment we're talking about here in terms of this one, though, because they won't have developed this resistance if they haven't had any treatment, correct?
If the multidrug resistance genes are turned on in their cancer cells, then most chemotherapeutic drugs will have no effect.
I see. So it's a bit of a blanket situation. And are you saying they could already be like this before they get any treatment?
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Okay. So it's good to have the right understanding. So it's a kind of a overarching on-off switch, which actually renders chemotherapy as a whole as not a very good approach.
Exactly. The ability of cells to actually expel toxic substances is one of the body's natural protective mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that natural protective mechanism to expel toxic substances is enhanced in almost half cancer cells.
I see. Right. Okay, well, that really is a major problem for thinking about treatment in those terms then.
Yes. So the thing is, if it was predetermined that a patient wouldn't benefit from chemotherapy by having the tests done that I've mentioned, then obviously alternative ways of treating with the cancer cells are highly recommended.
Yes.
Immunological approaches, or there's many other very interesting approaches now have been developed, like oncolytic viral therapy and other things like that.
Mm. Okay, well, yeah, that makes complete sense. So this is rather different to, I mean, you can have chemosensitivity testing, which says, is this chemotherapy better than that one? But you're actually saying that this is one test which would show there is a group of patients for which chemotherapy is a complete waste of time.
Exactly.
Blimey.
Or it is a waste of time, or it's going to be highly toxic. It's going to be very dangerous.
Right.
And could even kill.
Okay, so the combination of those two types of tests, to test people's enzymes, whether they're actually up for having chemotherapy, as well as this multi-drug resistant test, would knock off an awful lot of the patients, would say that they were really unsuitable for giving chemotherapy.
Exactly.
Mm. Okay, and how does radiotherapy compare with chemotherapy? Does it suffer from the same kind of things? It obviously, you do get treatment resistance, I believe. Is that true?
It does happen, yes. Eventually, some cancer cells can become resistant to a certain degree of radiation. One of the problems with radiotherapy is that, well, in the past, it was very difficult to avoid damage to healthy tissues that surrounded the cancer.
Yes.
And another serious problem with radiotherapy is that it is very difficult to deal with cancers that have spread or metastasized.
Yes.
Because that means, you know, one of the ways of dealing with a situation like that is to undergo whole body irradiation, and that is very, very toxic.
Right. So the radiotherapy suffers from different problems, but it's not something that you would advocate some kind of test for to find out suitability for treating with radiotherapy?
On the horizon, there are genetic tests being developed which will determine whether a person's healthy or normal healthy cells are sensitive or not, less sensitive to application of radiation.
Mm.
So in those situations, it will be that a cancer patient will be genetically typed to determine how much damage radiation will cause to their healthy tissues. And people, the problem also with radiotherapy is ionizing radiation. That's what radiotherapy is.
Yes.
It's one of the causes of DNA damage that causes development of cancer anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know that all too well. My own daughter died of radiation-induced cancer, so that's a major problem with radiotherapy, of course.
There is different ways of actually applying radiotherapy. One of the things that can be done, particularly with respect to cancers like prostate cancer, or situations when there is a well-localized tumor, it's possible to inject a small pellet of a radioactive substance into the tumor, and that localizes the radiotherapy to precisely to the neoplasm.
So that's
one form of radiotherapy that's very useful. Another form of radiotherapy, particularly with respect to thyroid cancer, is that people with thyroid cancer can be injected with radioactive iodine.
Right.
And of course, iodine concentrates into the thyroid gland and kills cancer cells in there. So there are benefits, specific benefits for radiotherapy. It just depends on the kind of tumour and whether it's spread or not, and whether a person's healthy cells are more or less sensitive to the radiation.
So this is kind of the personalised medicine that's been talked about for a while now, where actually we learn that, you know, what works for one person doesn't work for another, and actually this is why.
That's right.
So it's very important to, as you say, to find these things out. So on this, the matters we've been talking about so far, what do you have on offer to help?
Well, I would suggest if someone's genetic profile is incompatible with some of the methods of treating cancer that we've spoken about, there are lots of other possibilities, like immune-mediated situations, like fantastic approaches now to cancer. People are not familiar with oncolytic viral therapy. That's using viruses that specifically target cancer cells.
Okay, but just one second. Before we go on to talk about all this, I'm very interested to hear about all that. How does someone go about finding out that whether they're a good candidate for chemotherapy or radiotherapy or not?
Well, the best way of doing that is to determine what their genetic profile is. If someone is going to be offered chemotherapy, first of all, you need to know whether the chemotherapeutic drug is a prodrug or administered as an active drug.
Right.
Because there's different enzymes involved in the different kinds of chemotherapeutic drugs.
Okay. So they would want to know different pieces of information then, depending on what kind of chemo was proposed.
Yes. So, for example, what I do, if people come to me and say, my oncologist has said that they're going to give me this drug, this chemotherapeutic drug, so what I will then do, I'll determine what enzyme is responsible for either activating or metabolising that drug. And having done so, I then say I would strongly recommend that you get genetic typing of this kind or the other kind, and I'll tell you whether that drug could be helpful or harmful for you.
Right. Okay, and how do they go about getting that genetic typing?
There are places that do it, but it should be standard NHS treatment in my estimation, and that's what I'm trying to get established.
Right.
There is a company, a laboratory in Germany that does it. but it's very difficult to get these tests routinely done.
Right.
I'm really hoping that I can raise a lot of interest to actually get these tests established as standard tests for cancer patients.
Right. Well, that makes complete sense, and I wish you every success with that. In the meantime, if I'm a cancer patient, I'm going to have to go it alone here, it sounds like, and I'm going to have to pay for a private service to have the genetic test done. And that involves, what, sending a sample to Germany, does it?
Yes.
Right. Okay. And so what I'd be looking for is a company that offers personal genetic typing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And depending on the kind of enzyme, or for example, many of the enzymes that I've mentioned, if they ask about those and how much they cost, and take it from there. Sometimes these tests can be done on a cheek swab, mm-hmm. and sometimes they require a blood sample.
Right. Okay.
At this stage, it's really just left up to the patient to order the test themselves privately.
So the companies are happy to deal with the public directly. They don't need you to be through a doctor?
Mostly, yes.
Right. Okay. And the next question is, well, you get the results back. Well, somebody's got to interpret them, haven't they? So where do they go for that? Is that something you would do?
Yeah, that's what I do.
Right. Okay, great. Okay, so I think I've understood what we can do in the way of approaching orthodox treatments like that more safely. So now I'd like to go into the other side of your work. You've very much looked into, well, okay, for these people for whom these treatments are completely unsuitable, what should they be doing? And one aspect of your job title is immunopathologist. So the immune system has been one of your fascinations, obviously. So would you like to talk a little bit about the immune system, first of all? Because I think, it's completely off the radar of conventional oncology, really. There's a few new immune drugs coming in now, but it's pretty new territory. And people have got a lot of ideas about the immune system, which are not necessarily all true, I think. I think that, there are sort of folklore notions about the immune system and boosting the immune system, which don't take into account the whole breadth of the picture, which I think, well, you clearly do. And so it's not everything it seems. Would you like to just give us an introduction?
I'm so glad that you brought up the prospect of immunological approaches to anti-cancer treatment, because these offer remarkable possibilities.
Okay.
With regard to immunity, there's basically two types. There's adaptive immunity and there's innate immunity. Mm-hmm. Now, adaptive immunity is the system in which the body makes lymphocytes, T cells and B cells, which can either make cytotoxic T cells. Cytotoxic T cells are able to find cancer cells and kill them if they have been primed against some substance on the surface of that cancer cells.
Right.
Another kind of immune cell is a B cell. B cells actually make antibodies that circulate and can actually kill cancer cells by attaching to the surface of cancer cells. But it's mainly cytotoxic T cells that play a significant role in killing cancer cells.
Right.
If we stick to cytotoxic T cells, many cancer cells have developed ways of counteracting cytotoxic T cells that have been made by the body to kill cancer cells. And there are some remarkable ways in which scientists have manipulated cytotoxic T cells to overcome these problems with attacking cancer cells. And these are some of the really important ways in which immunological approaches can be used.
Right.
Now, one of the things, I did mention that B cells make antibodies that can attack cancer cells. Now, one of the most remarkable set of drugs that have been developed are monoclonal antibodies. Now, monoclonal antibodies basically originally were made in mice. So what happens is that if you inject a mouse with human cancer cells, the mouse will make antibodies against elements of the cancer cells. So what you can then do is, once the mouse has made those B cells that actually make antibodies to cancer cells, you can extract those B cells from the mouse and grow them up in the laboratory and extract the specific antibody that the mouse has developed to attack those a patient's cancer cells. And these are called monoclonal antibodies.
Right.
Because more often than not, they're just derived from one immunological cell of mouse origin.
Oh, really? Right.
And these monoclonal antibodies, there are a wide range of them now against many, many different components of many different cancer cells and many other aberrant cells as well.
Mm.
So monoclonal antibody usage is a very important breakthrough in immunological treatment in treating cancer cells.
Right.
Now, what they, because those mouse antibodies, those mouse-derived monoclonal antibodies, eventually can be recognized as immunologically foreign by someone that you're injecting them into, what they, the next stage, what they did was to then engineer those monoclonal antibody-producing mouse cells, genetically engineered them so that they mimic human antibodies. So now there is a wide range of genetically engineered monoclonal antibodies that that last much longer and are very, very useful for treating cancer. As long as you know, as long as you know that the antibody that you're going to put into someone, the monoclonal antibody, is going to react with some component on the cancer cell.
Right. So what you're saying, could I just check in a few things about that? First of all, there are lots of them and they target different things. You have to do a test on the cancer, presumably, in order to know which drugs to give.
Exactly.
Yeah, and is that routinely done?
Yes, it is. But by and large, it is. But more often than not, a particular cancer cell from a particular anatomical environment is known to have certain characteristics on the surface of that cancer cell. So, for example, in certain breast cancer cells, there is a monoclonal antibody called Herculin, which is very effective against Herculin-positive breast cancer cells. So you're absolutely right, Robin. You have to make sure that the monoclonal antibody that you administer to the patient is able to target something that's on the surface, some abnormal protein on the surface of the cancer cell.
Okay. Another question. In a way here, you, instead of propping up or improving or doing anything to the patient's own immune system, you're like sticking in a foreign immune system. You know, it's like you're importing one. That's how it seems to me. And therefore, my question is, well, what happens when you stop it? Does it, are you sort of wide open as a result, or do you have to take it for a very long time to be sure that it's done the job?
The use of monoclonal antibodies, as I mentioned, doesn't really interfere much with the patient's own immune system.
Right.
Not in the same way that chemotherapy does.
Right. So that's got to be good. I mean, it doesn't damp it down.
It is good. It's very good.
Yeah.
But often the substance that's expressed more on the cancer cells is also expressed on some healthy cells. So there can be side effects because there is cross-reactivity with the same cell surface protein on normal healthy cells. And that's one of the things that needs to be watched out for.
Mm-hmm. So are these seen to be curative drugs, or are these things that will extend life?
It's very difficult to use the word cure. Because by and large, they only extend life.
Right.
And the reason, one of the reasons for that is because cancer cells are constantly changing.
Yes.
And you can get cancer cells that change into something else that the monoclonal antibody can't recognise.
Right. So they do suffer from the same thing as chemotherapy, ultimately, but they're a much less harsh treatment.
Exactly.
So you can live with your quality of life is likely to be a lot better.
Yes.
Right. Okay, well, we're getting on with time, but I do want to hear a bit about some of the other approaches to supporting the immune system that you're interested in and that you've looked into.
Yes. Could I just mention that there's some very important... There's lots of other immunological approaches. And really, one of the ways that can offer more or less a cure in certain situations, in particularly in the leukemias,
yes,
is a bone marrow transplantation.
Yes.
In other words, you completely destroy the patient's own immune system and transplant them with someone else's, or it can be their own. You can do that, that often offers a complete cure for certain lymphomas and leukemias.
It's quite an ordeal, though, eh?
It is, but it's only those kinds of circumstances that you can use to actually think of a cure.
Yeah, well, but if it works, it's worth it, I'm sure.
It certainly is.
Yeah. Okay.
What I just basically mention, oncolytic viral therapy,
yeah,
and also 3-bromopyruvate, something really fantastic that's happening at the moment is by and large, in the past and mostly presently, cancers are treated with respect to the origin of their anatomical site.
You know, yes.
Breast cancer is treated differently to prostate cancer is treated differently to, you know, all of the different individual cancers considered to have specific treatments.
Yes.
Now, the thing is, they're called NTRK fusion proteins. And what these are, it's found that many, many cancers right across the board are associated with fused genes that control the cell cycle called NTRK fusion proteins. Also, new drugs have been developed which can suppress the expression of these new fusion proteins and are useful for a whole range of cancers, not just anatomically specific ones. These are a fantastic direction to go. I just want to mention briefly oncolytic viral therapy.
Yes.
Because one thing that has been recognised for hundreds and hundreds, well, maybe thousands of years, is that some cancers disappear without any treatment at all.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And that has been a well-known phenomenon for hundreds and hundreds of years. But it's only in recent times that studies have found out exactly what's going on. Basically, what scientists found was that in many situations where people got cancer and all of a sudden it disappeared, what they found was that by and large, most of these people had a flu-like illness before the cancer disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And to cut a long story short, what they found was there is a virus called a reovirus that viruses have to enter cells to hijack their genetic machinery to reproduce themselves, and in doing so they kill the cell that they originally hijacked.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these reoviruses, as it turns out, they prefer that they use the expression of an oncogene called RAS, R-A-S, to actually get into the cell so that they can reproduce themselves. Now, many cancer cells express a large amount of the oncogene RAS on their surface. So what was happening was this reovirus, when someone with cancer got infected and who had lots of RAS on the surface of their cancer cells, the virus targeted those cancer cells to reproduce itself, and in doing so kill the cancer cell,
right,
and release more virus, and that would then invade adjacent cancer cells that expressed a lot of RAS, and eventually it would run out of RAS cells to replicate itself, and in doing so killed all of the cancer cells.
Mm.
Now, this now is developing a new way of actually treating cancer, using viruses to kill cancer cells. And what's on the cards at the moment are many different kinds of viruses are being genetically engineered so that they can attack cancer cells that express all sorts of different proteins on their surface, like RAS. And there's some fantastic work going on all over the world, but particularly at Leeds University at the moment.
All right.
Developing fantastic new oncolytic viral therapies.
Mm. Fascinating.
And what I'd try to do is to get people, if possible, onto trials using oncolytic viral therapy if they have the right kind of cancers. I like to get them onto trials if I can at Leeds University.
Mm, mm. Well, look, Peter, I say we're nearly at the end, but I want to leave you time to tell us. I understand you're running some courses.
Yes.
Would you like to tell us?
Have some comprehensive courses for patients, practitioners, and students of the biological sciences, which go into not only these, but many of the aspects that I've mentioned to you. It explains immunological approaches and genetic approaches and lots of things like that. And really why I developed the courses was to actually get particularly alternative health practitioners educated to the extent that they can offer this information service to patients.
Right.
And so the courses are very easy to understand. And I also have an immunity course that describes all of the different, introduces the participant to monoclonal antibodies, T-cell mediated immunity, all sorts of things like that. But it also is not only to do with cancer. My immunology course also introduces the participant to all of the different ways in which immunity can actually cause disease or support health.
Mm-hmm.
And people are not aware that a mother's immunity, for example, can cause lots of very severe diseases in her unborn and newborn child, including things like autism, dyslexia, lots of neurological disorders like that. And on another platform, what I'm trying to do is to get the tests established in immunology laboratories to determine whether a mother has these antibodies that would affect whether her child may end up with autism or lots of neurological disorders or even heart disease. And the course explains all of these things. And just to reiterate, what I'm really trying to do, Robin, is to get alternative health practitioners to be aware of these processes so that they not treat, but offer information on these very important aspects of health.
Right. Fascinating.
And that's why I've developed these courses.
Right. Well, brilliant. So if people want to know more about the courses or want to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Either email, which is PETERHKAY at gmail.com,
mm-hmm.
or on 01772 691 443.
Okay.
Robin, I'm very, very keen to help all sorts of different kinds of health practitioner to have this information available to all sorts of people. As I say, it's not diagnosing, it's not treating, it's just a clinic that offers very important information. Mm. So it's an information clinic.
Very important. Well, look, absolutely fascinating, Peter. I was right about just getting started on the things I want to ask you. I think we could do another interview.
No problem. I can talk about.
I know there is. So, look, we must do another interview sooner rather than later. But
thank you. Robin, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and I really appreciate the wonderful things that that you do. It's very, very impressive.
Thank you very much indeed, and thank you for some fascinating and important insights today.
It's my pleasure entirely. All the best, Robin. Bye-bye.
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 Well, I learned quite a lot there and cleared up a few outright misunderstandings. For anyone contemplating conventional cancer treatment in the UK, or indeed anywhere else, that was potentially life-saving, but at the very least, highly important information. I'd like to draw your attention again to our new Wigwam website, that's wigwam.org.uk. It's all about support for people with cancer who are wanting to find out more about integrative medicine. And as part of this initiative, we're running free online forums, which are a chance to question an expert firsthand. We've had three now, which were recorded and are becoming available as resources on the website, and there'll be more to come. If you want to be in the loop, sign up and you'll be mailed full details. Thanks so much for listening today. Do join me again next week for another Yes Life show on UK Health Radio. Bye. Thank you.